Welcome to Podcast for the Creative Photographer. Here's photographer and teacher, Dennis Cole.
My interview today is with Roy Berkowitz, a longtime friend, a great photographer, one who works exclusively with the Holga camera. I wanted to interview him because of his artistic background and because I find that his work is very, very interesting to me. It's not traditional in any sense of the word. So I wanted to get an idea where this creativity came from and how he actually got it onto film. So our interview today is with Roy Berkowitz. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Roy, to the podcast. Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure to get dragged out of bed on Sunday.
If you would, please, tell me a little bit about yourself.
I grew up in New York City, so, you know, that's one of the predominant, you know, biographical notes in my life. You know, it definitely had a major impact on who and what I am. I'm definitely a city boy. I'm definitely have an eye that's caught and attracted to urban things. I came out here originally in 1979 after I got out of college. It was a very easy fit to land in San Francisco. Downtown, you know, Hyde and Sutter Street is basically like living in Manhattan, not different from, you know, the apartment building that I grew up in. I went to, you know, City College in New York, then went to art school, Pratt Institute, studied photography. And since then, I've basically worked in the photographic world. My income generating has always been as a peripheral part of the business, never really as a shooter. Managed to survive working in labs for a long time while there were still labs. Then had like a 10-year run working in visual effects film. And that also was built on my background in photography. I wouldn't have gotten that job if I didn't have all the photography background I did have. And now I'm struggling to find what to do now that I'm growing up.
How did you get started in photography? What was the point in time where it began meaning something to you?
The original reason that I started doing photography was that my brother was doing it, and my older brother. That was the little bug in my my bonnet, I guess. I don't know. Because being the younger brother, I couldn't really compete against him physically. It never really worked. But photography, yeah, you know, it's possible. And he gave it up pretty early. And, you know, I started taking classes. I remember taking a night class, going to a local high school to get access to the dark room. When I was in City College, took my first photography class there. And, you know, I went to City College to be some sort of scientist, you know, in some biological realm, because I really love science, but learned soon enough that I really wasn't a scientist. I just have kind of an aptitude for it and a like of the concepts. And that was a good thing to have going into photography, you know, all the basic stuff, you know, you need to have some sort of like grasp of some science in terms of exposure and chemicals and things like that. So that was a fairly good thing to have. I studied at Pratt as a photography major. I did medical photography. That's how I talked my parents into letting me go to art school, is that they had a medical photography program. And, you know, I did it and I, you know, promptly kind of blew it off. Although I did work at Rockefeller University for a year and a half as a medical photographer in their virology department. And it just, I was always interested in art as a kid. I always used to like to draw. And I still do, but I haven't done that in a long time. But photography was a very good fit for me.
So when you first got started in it, who were your major influences?
I don't think I had any major influences that I knew of when I first started. I didn't really even take, it wasn't until I was at Pratt that I had any kind of photo history. So it's just all the images that you're bombarded with daily, newspapers and magazines and things like that. I'm sure I saw Eugene Smith and Life magazine. I can't think of anybody that I was really that aware of when I first started doing it. I took art history before I took any photo history. So I probably had a fairly uneducated eye in that I was probably familiar with images that resonate, that become iconic, that are out there over and over again, but never really paid attention to who actually was doing them.
how did you come to be so fully engrossed in photography then? It sounds like your beginnings was very meager, so to speak, and yet you do so much now. How did that transition happen?
Well, good question. Never really thought of it. I don't think that I ever really took the drawings that I did seriously, you know? So it never really occurred to me that I could try to be a painter or anything like that. Photography, on a certain level, it's just easier than painting. You don't have to make a mess. As long as you can get yourself into a dark room, and even then it's not so crucial. For years and years when I just shot film and sent it off to the drugstore, basically, as a kid, once I started doing photography. It took a while before I even processed my own black and white film. So when I knew I wasn't going to be a scientist, that was going to be a disaster, you know, because I just don't have the math skills, then photography just seemed to make sense, you know. When I was in City College, I took photography and sculpture and art history, and it's like, it didn't even occur to me. It's like, well, I like sculpture too. I could do that. It just seemed to fit. Try photography, go to this art school. I didn't even have a portfolio. It's like, it was such a joke in some ways. All right, oh, I want to go to Pratt. Oh, I have to have a portfolio. Well, let me see. I went out and bought some paints. And the only time I ever really painted was to make the portfolio for Pratt. And I went to the Museum of Natural History and did some sketches of some of the dioramas there. And I remember I painted an emperor penguin and a puffin. God knows whatever happened to those things.
Yeah, I have some early sketches. I wonder what happened to also. It's like, gee, do I even want to go back and look at those anymore?
Yeah, it's fun to look.
I know that at some point in your work, you kind of transitioned from early stuff that everybody does, you know, to get through school. Where did that transition for you into something a bit more serious?
Well, I think I was always serious. That was part of the problem. It's good to be serious. You don't want to be solemn, you know, too full of yourself. And I think I was a little of that. But I can look at my early work, and it's the same stuff I'm still interested in. It's the same stuff that I look at. I have a better eye, I have a better craft, I have more mature responses to it. But I remember, I'm interested in iconic objects, places, people somewhat less, pretty less. And, you know, I can remember being fascinated by objects and photographing things. And my teacher was like, Roy, stop photographing things. You know, make pictures, don't photograph things. And stop putting them in the center. But, you know, and it's a valid criticism, but I think it's one-dimensional. I think it's very Western in its compositional demands there. Where what I realized later is that there's a lot of other traditions out there that do compositions on a totally different way. I'm very interested in mandalas. I'm very interested in like Russian icons. They're very centered. They're very focused. They're not so much object-driven, although I could make a case for the mandalas. But I don't see my work as being all that different in a lot of ways than what I started doing when I was in art school. Just better. And there's, you know, a dozen pictures from that time period that I don't mind showing to anybody. So art school, if you come out with a dozen pictures, you're ahead of the game. Yeah, I don't think, you know, you really should expect to come out with much.
Earlier, you talked about the difference between being technical about photography and being a shooter. Can you talk about that a bit more? There's a distinct difference between the two thinking processes.
To be a successful shooter, part of your skill set has to be sales. You have to be a good talker. You know, you have to be a good communicator with the client and generate the work. Not really anything to do with being a good, you know, capturing a good image, a totally different skill set. It's a survival skill that really has nothing to do with how good of an image you can make. But don't go into business as a shooter if you can't talk to people, unless you have enough money to pay for an agent. He takes care of that role. I don't have that skill set. You know, I'm essentially not friendly. And, I like talking to people I know. I'm not particularly happy to talk to strangers consistently. I have enough energy for one or two a day, and that's about it. you know, I have a technical aptitude. It's very easy for me to handle the peripheral part of the business. It's a big industry. A lot of support staff out there, so to speak, for the people who are doing the shooting. And for a long, long time, that was a very good spot for me to be. I got everything I needed to do. I learned a lot about the craft. It gave me a certain amount of freedom. It gave me access to doing things. You know, I never had to have my own darkroom. I always had access to printing. I've always loved to print, from analog and now digital and inkjets. That's crucial. I mean, I'd rather spend the money on a trip than invest in building my own darkroom. That's just more stuff to hold me down. I've got enough stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to be involved with this big thing called photography.
How deeply did the change from film to digital affect your work?
I wouldn't say so much that it affected my work. It's affected my income generating aspect. To me, the tool is important but not crucial. If you gave Picasso a full set of paints, you get one thing. If you gave him a crayon, you'd get another thing. Are they inherently different? On a certain level, yes, but it's still a Picasso. You know, I'd be happy to have a Picasso crayon drawing. Do I care if he had a camera that he shot it on film or he did it on digital? Not particularly. There's certain inherent strengths and weaknesses of any medium, and you know, the craftsman learns, you know, to work with them. For myself, because I've been even before I was doing had many years of photography work experience, I got sick to death of it. On a certain level, I hate photographers. They're so wrapped up in the toys. It's boys and toys, you know. I used to get together with photography coffee clatch and have these, you know, people get together and talk about how sharp their lenses are. And I'm like bored to tears. You know, it's like, yes, congratulations, you made a very sharp, boring picture. You know, any fool with a tripod can do that. It's so not what the work is about. Since 1991, my main image capturing device was the Holga, a toy plastic camera, you know, similar to the Diana. It's very low end, it's low tech, it's got a spring for a shutter. It pares things down to essentials. I'm not a detail-driven guy. I'm not interested in working with a Hasselblad. Massive detail doesn't affect me emotionally. You know, I'm finding, you know, I'm doing work with a little, like almost the digital equivalent. It's a tiny little, basically point-and-shoot digital camera. It's 12 megapixels, but they're crappy pixels. I'm making decent pictures with it. I'm working it. I'm working it differently than film, because it's different now. But my feeling about it is still relatively the same. And one thing that pushing me maybe even further from a realistic photographic image, which is good as far as I'm concerned. I'm like tired of, you know, realism.
Part of what this podcast is all about is to be able to understand where the creative side comes from. I know the technical side is one that's there that can be very, very boring. Necessary at times, but very boring. What I want to find out is, where does this creativity come from? When you're behind the camera and you see something that interests you, what goes on? Where's that thought process go?
Well, you know, I think it's different for me, let's say, because I've been doing it for, I guess, around 35 years, right? So anybody who's doing it that long, at a certain point, they've internalized a lot of things, their whole life, essentially. So there isn't a ton of my thinking involved, and especially with the Holga, because I have no options. I can't mess around with the exposures and do something with depth of field, and all those options are gone, and that's fine. You know, it makes it a pure gut level visual reaction. I get an itch and I scratch it. I hate to sound like I don't think, but it's like the thinking isn't so important to me. My artwork is much more emotional than intellectual. The intellectual stuff happens afterwards. I could talk about it, but I react to it on a certain gut level. I want people to react to it on a gut level. I don't want it to be too overthought. There's certain things that have always interested me, you know, and I could look at my work and make all these subcategories and, you know, overlapping Venn diagrams of what picture goes where. But that's all after the fact. You know, the picture's already done by that point. You know, I'm not consciously thinking of that, well, this will go into that you know, category. It's just that, wow, look at that blue, amazing, you know, and react to that. Let's see, the patterns of this bridge and the shadows are like driving me crazy. You know, I know there's a photograph in here waiting for me. And, you know, that is actually much more like what happens when I go out shooting. It's almost, it's a hunter seeing, I'm following the spoor of my prey, you know? And it's like, you know, I'll walk around and it's like, yeah, the light is starting to become interesting. And now the space that I'm in is like talking to me. Now, where can I be to, you know, utilize everything that's right in front of me and find that sweet spot and photograph it?
Now, I've been with you a couple of times when you've been shooting, and it's kind of interesting to watch how you work. What I do know is that a good deal of the result of your work happens in post-processing. How important is that to the original thought when you photograph the work, or how important is that in the total picture for you?
I'd say it's pretty much a 50-50 thing. I mean, obviously, if I don't capture it, nothing can happen. It's only going to be a pleasant memory in my head. But it's really not any different than when I was printing analog. Analog let me, there's all sorts of happy accidents that happen as you're in the darkroom. One thing leads to another. Wow, I was going to print it this way, but I left the aperture open and it went dark. And now look at it. It's like it makes me want to do something else. Working on the computer is really similar on that level, except that as a color photographer, now I have so many more tools to work with than when I was in the darkroom. For a black and white person, I think maybe not as radical, because black and white had so many more options. Color printing, you didn't have as many different papers. You couldn't, you know, you had to go through a machine, basically. You were pretty limited. But once I was able to do, you know, scan my film and work on the computer, it really opened it up to me to really play with the image and to not be so stuck with what was there. What was there was a good place to start, but it's not necessarily where I wanted to end.
I've noticed some of the images that you shot. I've been there when you shot them, and then I see the results printed coming out of the printer, and I'm thinking, now, how in the world did he come up with that? You know, where did that come from? What part of creativity made that happen? Was it just the play thing, or was there an intent involved? How much precognizant photography is going on here?
I think it starts with play. It's because it's how you discover. So, you know, the happy accident. It's like, wow, that's really cool. I like the way that looks. How can I make more of this? You know, what's the process to, you know, reproducing this particular look? So there's like a learning curve with that kind of thing. So it's like, oh, okay, I've discovered something about myself. I like the way this looks. So, you know, I could go out and actually I can go back to older pictures and try it on them, see what happens. I can, you know, work on new pictures and see what they look like. You know, it's like I want as much freedom as a painter has, essentially. From the very beginning, I used to say, I was like, I didn't want to be bound by the tyranny of optics and chemistry. They're there, we have to deal with them, we live in the world, the film, lenses, they all work a certain way, but I always like to, you know, corrupt it a little bit, find the flaws that are inherent in everything and enter into the work that way. In the 80s, in the museum, the Asian Museum, they had a show of this young Chinese inkbrush painter. She was like this phenomenal prodigy. Started when she was really young, and now she was like 14. So she'd been doing it for like, I don't know, 10 years, and just amazing. But at that point, the technique no longer was a challenge for her. It was meaningless to her. And she was probably bored. As amazing as her early work was, the thing that I came away from with that show was at the very end, where they laid out a long, big piece of blank paper, and she had a big brush, and she loaded it up with ink, and she just flung the brush across the paper, and it bounced and skipped and made splashes and stuff like that. And then she looked at it and goes, okay, now I could start. Here's this thing. It's a flaw. But from this flaw, I could enter into this and create something. And I think that, to me, was amazing. So that's one reason why I like using the Holga. I like using basically a point and shoot. The flaws are interesting to me. much more so than buying a, you know, $7,000 Leica, buying a $30,000 Hasselblad. You know, I wouldn't even want to be carrying those around with me. I have to have my camera with me every day.
What I want to ask is, if you could sit down with any artist of your choice and have a conversation, who would that be?
It's mostly painters, honestly. I mean, my favorite painter is this German expressionist, Max Beckmann. I just love his work. It's metaphorical, it's archetypical. It's, you know, not the prettiest thing in the world. It shows mankind in not the kindest light. I'm kind of a modernist. I love modern art. You know, there's photographers in there as well, but it's less important to me. When I go to museums, if I want to go to a museum, 9 times out of 10, I want to go see, you know, a painter or a sculptor, not so much a photographer. I want, if I'm going to be influenced by anything, I want to be influenced by something that's not photography and bring it into photography. So it's like, I can't copy a sculptor as a photographer, but I can understand what he's attempting and try to attempt the same thing. And because we're in different mediums, you know, I can't really copy him.
So you're really getting fed by other art
yeah.
Media.
Yeah, much more so than photography. I mean, I look at it a lot, but I, you know, it's different. You know, I have a different relationship to it than a lot of other photographers that I know. It really, you know, I've gone through real love-hate, especially since I worked as my income generator. There's times when I just stopped doing it. You know, when I first came to San Francisco, I was processing color negative film, which at that point was almost exclusively like weddings and bar mitzvahs. It was like, oh my God. You know, it's like, is this photography? It's like, I just hardly shot film at all. I painted, I drew, I made jewelry, I made my own t-shirts, you know, hand-painted t-shirts. It was a fun year and a half. And I, you know, I go back and forth like that. This is the most dedicated I've been to photography has been since I started using the Holga. I haven't stopped doing photography since 1991. That's, you know, up to that point, that was not my, you know, modus operandi. I would always put it away and do watercolors or do flower arrange, Ikebana. But since I found the Holga, it was like, ah, this glove fits my hand really nicely. It let my sense of humor in. I started using it and I didn't take it seriously. You know, it was kind of a joke. And because of that, you know, it's like I let down my solemnness with this, you know, craft. And it really opened things up for me.
Now that you've identified somebody that you could talk with, what would you ask him?
I don't know. What would I ask him? I mean, you know, it's like, it's not so much what I would ask him. You know, it's like, since I'm not a painter, you know, I couldn't ask him about his craft because it's meaningless. It's more wanting to know why he did certain things. He added all these metaphorical people and objects. There's no guide to how to decipher his work. You know, we look at it and we bring our own baggage to it. And it's like, oh, a candlestick and with a candle burning. Well, that to me means this. It's like looking at the tarot cards. There's some accepted definitions, but it's not carved in stone. You know, we all react to things in a slightly different way. You know, we have our own history, our own baggage. So I'm going to look at this, have a reaction to it, and somebody else is going to have a reaction to it. How close does it hew to his original, you know, impetus for painting it? You know, I had a girlfriend, and for her thesis show, the title of the thesis show was "The Title Is Not the Painting," or something of that nature. Meaning, it's like, I've called it this, but it's not necessarily that. It's like, you're going to call it something else. It's okay. You know, you, as an artist, at a certain point, you cut responsibility for how people are going to respond to your work. I want to do it for this, but I can't force you to respond to it that way. You know, I can't put a gun to you and say, no, it's about being happy.
Who are your real-life heroes?
A question I've never, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't really think in those terms. There's people who I respect what they've done. Basically, anybody who's really walked the walk, you know. It's like, you're an artist, fine. You know, are you producing art? Are you living it? Is it a real thing for you, or is it a kind of facade? I don't even necessarily have to like the work. It's a very consuming obsession. I'd say like 80% at least of the people I went to art school with don't ever do it. You know, they stopped. It's just like, it wasn't important enough for them. Being an artist is, you know, if you poke me, I will bleed art. That's basically who I am. So My heroes are the artists who have really like lived their craft, whether it's photography or painting, and other people as well. But it's the same thing. They've been really dedicated to what they are, whether they're scientists or peace workers or a good mom or dad.
In your work with what you've been doing, and it's followed a course in the last several years that's very interesting work. I've always liked seeing it. Where do you see this going? Or do you?
Like I mentioned before, getting away from really representational work, it's inherent in some ways in photography that you're in and of the world. You take a camera and you turn it outwards and you photograph what's in front of you. It's the world. But it's like saying that everything's got to be photo real, whether you're a painter, a watercolorist, a sculptor. That doesn't hold true for them. There's a lot of options out there for them. I want those same options. You know, I worked on one image, sort of a commission, and I had to photograph this place at night, and I was using my little digital camera, and it was just, you know, kind of full of noise, which happens with a little sensor. And I just started playing with it and pushing things, and all of a sudden I came up with something that looked like Whistler. Very moody, very grainy, motion, and you know, this incredible blue through there, and it's like a color I really respond to. It's like, wow, this mundane thing has now got this whole mystery and beautiful colors which really weren't in there, and you couldn't even tell, you know, what I was really photographing. I mean, you could see that's sort of a car and that's sort of a person and that's a building. But when I showed it to the people who kind of wanted it, it's like, oh yeah, that's this. I'm like, oh, well, really? We would never have known. Well, do you like it? And it's like, yeah, okay, fine. You liked it.
So what I'm hearing is that you're pretty happy with what you're doing right now. And I don't hear any leaps or bounds into new areas or new media or new ideas for you. It seems like you feel comfortable in your niche is what I'm hearing. Or are there areas that you really want to jump out for?
For me, that's putting the cart before the horse, because I don't pre-think where I want to go necessarily in terms of the art. It's almost always afterward, the fact going, wow, like over the last 6 months, I produced these kind of pictures, which are different than what I've done before. So all of a sudden, I'm looking at something in a different way, and I can see where I've been and that it's different. And, you know, and I'm continuing looking at that stuff. But it's not something I consciously decided, like, well, I'm only going to photograph round things from now on because I'm really interested in the concept of round. It's sort of not my personality, not my personal psychology to work that way. It's too much head for me. You know, I don't want to pre-think and overthink. I want to just work on a very more emotional level and see where it takes me. In a lot of ways, I've been very influenced by the Surrealists and the Dada crew in that I really believe that your unconscious and your subconscious is really more important than your intellect. And that's where a lot of my stuff comes from, really. I rarely, you know, think and go, well, you know, I'm going to go and try doing things and make it look like this. It's just not, you know, the way I work.
Yeah, you know, many times I've taken a look at a piece of art and I have to ask the question, how in the world did you create that? Where was your mind when you were doing this? What were you thinking about? How does this happen? You know, as a photographer, I find trying to figure out those things is really quite important in the growth and in development of your skills and your abilities. What would you offer in terms of that?
Well, it's something I mentioned earlier in terms of internalizing. You know, at a certain point, at a certain level, age, maturity, it all starts to soup, a stew that's coming into all the flavors are like melting together, and it's starting to be something that's really starting to become tasty. I'm happy to work that way. I think that everything's in here, you know, everything I've done, everything I've seen, it doesn't go away. I might not remember the names. Can't bring up the moment, you know, although I have an incredibly visual memory. I can remember specific exposures, captures. I can remember specific not captures. Oh, I couldn't take the picture of that bicycle in Japan. I still remember that bicycle in Japan. you know. But it's all in there. It's having faith in your craft and in your ability that you can go and make the art. Something's gonna, you know, jump up and bite me on the ass and say, "Hey, look at me! You know, aren't you here to do something? Make a picture, for God's sakes."
This has been a lot of fun. This is interesting because most people don't talk about this stuff. You know, this is a hard subject for a lot of artists to talk about. Where they develop things from, you know?
Yeah, it's stretching muscles I haven't really stretched in a while.
You know, as students in my classes, they not only ask questions that seem so very simple at times, the answers seem so simple, but they're also challenging some of the paradigms that are out there, especially today, because many of my students have never, ever used film. Mm-hmm. They've never had to think in terms of film chemistry or film limitations. They've always been working in digital and don't know anything else. So for those students, I'm finding that there's much more diversity in what they're creating. Mm. It doesn't follow the same lines of creativity that I've been accustomed to in film or what I've seen happen from film. Do you look at work in that way? Do you think of work in making those comparisons at all?
Film and digital are just, you know, other tools. But every tool's got its strength and every tool's got its weaknesses. You know, you could hammer a nail with a pliers, but you're not really going to be as very efficient with it. And forget about trying to use a hammer as a screwdriver. But they're great tools, nonetheless. I think digital has the potential to be an amazing tool, but I think it has so many inherent weaknesses in terms of its process. It's one thing shooting film, you're forced, unless you're a trust fund baby, to have to be more economical. It has a beginning and an end. I went on a trip and I only took 10 rolls of film. When I finished those 10 rolls, it's gone. That's it. It's done. So you just can't shoot mindlessly. Digital, that's a big vacuum for it. I think people don't have the discipline that a film person has. You know, you can learn that. But, you know, you go somewhere and you shoot 5,000 pictures. You're bound to get something, but you have to edit 5,000 pictures. You know, who honestly is going to look carefully at all 5,000? It forces you to kind of do a certain kind of skimming. You know, when I shoot the Holga, if I shoot 3 rolls at a time, it's a lot. You know, I'll scan it, I'll make a contact sheet. If I scan an individual frame, you know, I've got to clean up all the dirt and the little Mars and all that stuff, you know, and so I'm in there at 200%. I'm looking at every, you know, pixel practically, you know, from top to bottom and left and right. It's like I'm intimately involved in the geography of my frame. I doubt very many digital people really spend the amount of time on the pure image like that. I mean, it's the least interesting part of the process in a lot of ways, but I really know my image. So, you know, I'm not even sure how much this relates to the question, but that's sort of what came up into my head when you mentioned it.
No, that's okay. Yeah, that's absolutely perfect, because there's a lot of people working digital only that don't understand that dichotomy, necessarily not shooting so many and having to be critical about your captures and knowing exactly when and where and being judicious about pressing that shutter. Mm-hmm. You know? So, yeah, it's good for them to hear that from other people, too.
And it's like, you know, if you've ever shot 4x5 film, I mean, you know, it's big, it's heavy. You could take the holders, you know, you get 2 shots in a holder, and each holder weighs X, and it takes so much space up, and you sling a bag of holders over your shoulder, and the tripod and all this stuff. It forces you to think in a different manner. I mean, a lot of that is negative, too. I mean, sure, you know, how much better would it be if it weighed, you know, a quarter of that, and, you know, the things were smaller, and still get the quality of, but I think it's a good lesson. I had a conversation with an acquaintance of mine, a photographer who's been doing it for a long, long time. And he was like, "Wow, digital is so great. I can do all these things. Really, you know, I was able to shoot and produce a book in a week and this and that. And it's like fast and it's like, it's, you know," and it's like, and I was thinking, well, certainly digital is fast. There's no two ways of, you know, about arguing about that. But it's like, if you were talking instead of photography, and you're saying, talking about food, it's not a good argument anymore. It's like saying McDonald's, wow, it's so fast and it's cheap. And I don't have to pay for this. And it's it's junk food. And I think that's a big trap in digital, is that it can become the art equivalent of junk food. like hipstermatic drives me crazy. It's so easy. It's so easy. Any crappy image, throw a good filter on it, and it, wow, how fascinating is that? And people are happy to just leave it like that. It's like, I put, you know, with my digital work, I put a lot of filters on it and stuff like that. But it's like, I work the image. It's like no different than when I was shooting film, really. You know, the filter is one aspect of it. And then, you know, I do all this other work. And mostly I don't see that.
This has been very interesting, Roy. Thank you very much for taking time out to spend with us and giving us your thoughts. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.